Good morning on Tuesday, November 11th, 2014, Veterans Day in the U.S. This is Brian Madden. You're listening to a BrianMadden.com podcast. I'm joining from San Francisco on the Skype. We have Gabe joining from Omaha.
Hello.
Omaha, the location of some
snow today.
Snow, some tall buildings, not as tall as those in Texas, as we were discussing in the warm-up to the podcast.
People wonder what happens, and that's it.
Yeah. We also have joining us from San Jose, Bala Narasimhan with Prinix Data. So, Bala, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
And you're joining from San Jose, which does not have any tall buildings, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, that makes sense. When you drive on 101, you don't see any tall buildings.
But you guys are by the airport. I was down there. So Prinix Data, you know, you're a storage company. So this podcast today is sponsored by Prinix Data, and we want to talk about VDI and storage. And so there's a lot of sort of things to talk about on that list, like, you know, disk image management and IOPS and performance and capacity and costs and all that sort of stuff. And I think I met you guys, I don't know, is it
Riform?
6 months ago, a year ago? It was more recently. Prinix Data has been around since, you're not super old, like I think 2010 or something, is that right?
No, we're just a little over 2.5 years old. So the company was founded February of 2012.
So brand new, and you are a storage company. We'll start at the beginning. Prinix Data is storage.
That's correct. So we are a company that has a software solution at the intersection of virtualization and storage. So we don't have a storage product that's for the physical environments. We're focused on virtualized environments, and our product is called FVP. And currently we have version 2.0 in the market. And like I said, it's a software-only solution that allows our customers to decouple their storage performance requirements from their storage capacity requirements.
Okay, so when you say software-only, so you're not – I don't buy a box that says Prinix Data on it. I just download some bits and I run this on my, what, existing hypervisor, SAN, NAS, whatever.
That's correct. So you download the software from our website. We have a 30-day trial as well. And you install our software in your virtualization environment. Today, we support VMware vSphere. Specifically, we support 5.0, 5.1, and 5.5. So you install our software in your environment, and you're off and running. No changes to your environment whatsoever.
And so give me a quick overview of what exactly the product does. Because, you know, out of the box, I mean, I've got vSphere. I'm using it for VDI. It's got storage. I can see drives and, you know, image management, that kind of stuff. So what are you doing that I don't get out of the box?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll take a step back and motivate the problem statement, because that was basically the solution that the problem we wanted to solve as we started this company. So if you look at the way typically storage is deployed in virtualized environments, what you have is, again, like you said, a vSphere, for example, running on a bunch of hosts and some form of shared storage behind that. And that shared storage is catering to two requirements in that environment, right? It's trying to satisfy the capacity and data services needs of that environment. And it's also trying to satisfy the performance requirements of the applications that are running in that environment. We believe that the storage that you have is doing a wonderful job of providing capacity and data services, but on the performance side, not so much, right? And so the way the enterprise has typically reacted to that problem is they will go and buy more storage in order to solve that performance problem. And from our perspective, at least, that's a little upside down, because what you're doing is you're buying capacity in order to get performance. So as we looked at the market, you know, the problem that we saw was that you have this strange concept of buying capacity in order to get performance. And what we wanted to do was to kind of break that, right? To see if customers could invest in storage performance when they want that, and invest in storage capacity and data services when they want that. And we wanted to be that performance tier. So essentially what you're getting when you're complementing your virtualized environment with Prinix Data FVP is you're getting a scale-out storage performance tier for your virtualized environment that complements your existing investments in capacity and data services.
And you've seen what we've seen a lot of people do, which is try to put their virtual desktops onto their existing storage, which the what you mentioned where adding performance means adding more drives or adding capacity makes it that's how you get speed in the sort of old way of thinking. But with virtual desktops, like that added capacity doesn't help us at all. So we're just spending money where we don't need to spend money. So that makes sense. And we've always been saying, I mean, from day one, we've always said that, you know, with if you're going to do desktop virtualization, or if you're going to do VDI, you should not be using your classic big iron storage. You need to be having a bespoke desktop virtualization specific storage platform, whatever that may be.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So what is your actual... First of all, FVP, what does that mean?
FVP does not stand for anything. Think of it like ESX, right? It's just an acronym. That's the name of our
Elastic Sky Architecture or something like that. Isn't that ESX? Okay, so it's not like you're not saying like
Elastic Sky X.
F virtual polyums or anything. It's just some letters that that are the product.
Yeah, exactly. Just an acronym.
So FVP, so, you know, what is it actually doing in order to make the storage faster?
Yeah, so what it's doing is it's leveraging server-side resources, either flash devices such as PCIe cards or SSDs in the host or the RAM inside of the host in the environment. And it's building out a clustered scale-out performance tier. And in the process, what it's doing is it's making sure that all the IOs that the VMs are issuing are coming out of that server-side tier. And we do this while causing no changes to your environment. So essentially what you have is all the IOs that the VM are issuing are now coming from the server side. This is really nice because the performance needs of the VMs are being satisfied right next to the VM on the server side. While you keep all your existing investments as is, because like I said, the shared storage that you have is in fact doing a really good job of data services and capacity. Why change that? Similarly, your investments in networking and servers and all of that are doing what they're good at. And so what FVP is doing is it's taking those server-side resources such as flash devices and RAM, building out a performance tier that scale out so that it can grow with your environment, making sure all the IOs from the VMs are coming from there. So you get server-side performance and consistent performance.
Okay, so you've got all your VDI hosts, and I'm sure what you guys do is, you know, useful in more than just VDI, but probably today we're talking, you know, just in the context of VDI. So you've got all your VDI hosts, and they're going to use their sort of, I don't know what you would call it, like permanent storage is where it's always been. It's like on the SAN or something like that. And okay. So what you're doing is... So you're taking, you say like you can use flash drives in the VDI host or even RAM or a combination of both, and then build that, like you sort of make that like the caching tier essentially. But the data is still written and ultimately stored back on the original storage location. It's just you're building sort of like the like a caching tier that's local to each VDI host.
That's correct. From a technology perspective, the best way to kind of understand what we're doing is thinking of it from a caching perspective. You're right. The backend storage that you have is eventually where the data goes and is at rest because that's where your data services are, and that is your capacity tier. We do not present you a data store, so to speak. We are not where the data eventually resides, but we are building a performance tier for your data in motion. So, yes, from a technology perspective, you can definitely think of it as a caching layer.
And then what about things that get written back? I guess you ultimately have to write those back to the sort of permanent location.
That's correct. So in our product, we accelerate both reads and writes. The reads are between the two, reads are somewhat easier because you can make a copy of the data on the server side flash or RAM and make sure the IOs come from there. On the write side, it's more problematic because if you were to acknowledge the write to the VM after writing it on the server side, then you need to make sure that that data eventually makes it to the backend storage. And that's what we do. So basically, from an implementation perspective, what we're doing is imagine one of those VDI desktops is doing a write. We will write that data onto the server side flash or RAM and acknowledge that back to that desktop. So the desktop is getting server-side performance, therefore latency is lower and user experience is better. And then we'll destage that write from the server side onto the backend storage, because again, your backend storage is the where the data is at rest eventually. Of course, what we do also is you can imagine a scenario where between us acknowledging that write to the VM and us writing it back to the storage, if you have some form of outage, you could potentially lose that data. And so we've built protection for that reason in our product. So we also complement our write acceleration with replication so that you can make one or more copies of that data on other server-side resources so that in the event of an outage, we'll simply go and get the data from the mirrored copy. So we provide guarantees against data loss while we are accelerating the writes.
So it can, so it literally, because you can write to your sort of caching tier and the VDI host faster, you know, you can put it in your cache and put it in like the neighboring VDI host cache, both at the same time very quickly. And then if it takes longer to get back to sort of the permanent location and it fails in the meantime, you've already got it in another location.
So be it. Yeah, that's cool.
Which is cool because like you don't even need that for VDI, I don't think, you know? I mean, I'll take it. That's awesome. But, you know, because we're not talking about, like, if this is just sort of general, like, VDI usage, I mean, any users, like, saving files and that kind of stuff, those are going to be saved onto, like, the traditional, you know, file server. And, you know, like, it's not, like, I feel like if a desktop goes down hard, you know, you don't care about, oh, my gosh, what was the last bit that I wrote in the last 2 seconds, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. So that's exactly right. So we have a number of VDI customers who deploy us in what we call write-back mode with zero peers, which is basically saying that the writes are going to go to the server-side medium that Phoenix Data is managing, but you know it's not going to make mirrored copies. And so you get the write acceleration without the mirroring, because you know even if there's an outage, they can simply restart the desktop and everything is good.
Yeah.
We do have some customers who run us in write-back with peering, though. When they're using persistent desktops, customers tend to think about mirroring as an important part of the deployment.
So that's a good segue, I guess. I want to talk about the sort of persistent desktop thing. And, you know, I know we've talked about this in the past, that for years I always felt that VDI really had to support persistent desktops, and that was the right way to do it. And I wrote an article about a month ago sort of saying, well, now, you know, our modern-day application virtualization has come a long way, and, you know, all the storage vendors are now able to support wait, no, I'm confusing myself. So I said that, you know, we can support. So now all the storage vendors can support persistent. But that said, modern application delivery actually can support, you know, basically all applications. And having user-installed apps is not as important nowadays because we've got, you know, like web apps and phones and tablets and stuff. So now I think that the storage technology is actually good enough to allow people to do persistent. It almost doesn't matter because we can do either way.
You mean non-persistent? Yeah.
Well, I was going to say storage technology is good enough to do persistent. Other technologies are good enough to do non-persistent. So it kind of doesn't matter. Yeah. But I'm guessing I'm asking you, Bala, so you can do persistent or non-persistent. You don't really care.
That's right. So we are application agnostic, right? Because we will accelerate all the VMs in the environment. So what is running inside the application, we are agnostic to. But what we've seen is that, you know, in the persistent desktop environments, what we've seen is that customers do have performance problems, right? And the one that comes to mind for me is an environment where it was predominantly write environment. I'm going to say about 90% of the IOs were writes. And so they were hammering the backend storage with these writes, and they were just not able to get the performance that they wanted out of it. And so they deployed FVP to complement their primary storage. And because it was persistent desktops, they wanted to run it in write-back mode with mirroring. So they have one peer. And, you know, they were getting server-side performance on those desktops at that point, and, you know, the user experience was tremendous after that.
So when it comes time to actually implementing, you mentioned sort of different types of hardware that you can use. I mean, you can use RAM to make a cache. You can have like SSDs or, you know, PCIe, I assume like Fusion I/O cards or something like that. Do you have recommendations, or how does this work? Like, do people typically buy your software and then buy more hardware to plug into their boxes, or do they buy just the software and sort of let the software do what it can with their existing hardware?
Yeah, so what we saw when we started shipping the product a year and a half ago was that while some customers did have server-side flash devices on hand, many did not. And customers were looking for guidance on what flash devices to procure to use with FVP. Now, from a technology perspective, our product will work with any server-side flash device, right? We don't require it to be a particular make or model. But what we've seen also is that the performance characteristics of the server-side flash devices are all over the place, right? And so on the flash side, at least, what we've done is we've introduced a program called Pernix Drive, which is essentially a program where we partner with server-side flash vendors. And we've certified some of those devices because we've tested them and we've made sure that, you know, their performance characteristics are both very good and very predictable. And when they work with FVP, they're able to do a really good job. So we have a number of flash devices that are in our Pernix Drive program. When we released FVP 2.0 about 2 months ago, we also introduced support for RAM. So now customers can use the RAM inside their host for accelerating their VMs. So clearly, you know, if they have RAM available on the servers, they can just use that. They don't need to have a flash device. That makes it so much more seamless from a user's perspective.
So when you're talking about Pernix Drive, so I'm looking on your website now. This is all, you know, it's Intel, Micron, Kingston, Toshiba, Western Digital. So it's, you're talking about like these actual SSD drives have been certified. So they know that they're getting sort of like an enterprise class SSD that works well and not just what they got at their local Best Buy.
That's correct. We've tested against them. We have customers who've deployed with them. We know that it provides both enterprise quality and consistent performance. And so those are the drives that we recommend to our customers.
So now you have the RAM. You can use RAM for cache also. I assume that's faster. Is that better? Can people do this all with just memory? Or do they have to decide, like, oh, what's better? Should I throw another? Well, I guess probably memory is more expensive maybe. I don't know. Like, how do they balance out? Do I do SSD or RAM or both or none or what?
Yeah, so before I answer that question, let me just give you a preview of the technology on how we use RAM. So when a user is trying to allocate RAM as an acceleration resource with FVP, we show them the amount of available RAM on all the hosts within the environment. You have to contribute a minimum of 4 GB into the FVP cluster from each of the hosts, and the maximum that we support per host is 1 TB. Right, so we've designed the solution to be very scalable, and you can increase and decrease the amount of RAM in the FVP cluster dynamically. So you could allocate 16 GB right now. Tomorrow you may decide that the workload's footprint has increased, so you want to change that to 24. The day after you want to bring it down to 16. It just works. You know, you can just do that dynamically. Now, we use RAM for accelerating both reads and writes, and when you accelerate writes with RAM, we also provide you fault tolerance. So this is interesting, right? Because unlike flash, RAM is a volatile medium. And so we've essentially made that a non-volatile medium for you because we allow mirroring even when you're using RAM. So which use cases are best for RAM? I think all applications that you have in your data center are good candidates for acceleration with RAM because we provide you that fault tolerance for writes. Having said that, it really is a function of what the working set of your application is and how much RAM you have. So for example, if you have a 20 terabyte database in your environment and you have a host that has, you know, 256 gigabytes of RAM in it, clearly that's not going to cut it because that database is so huge. But if you think that you have enough RAM in your host to satisfy the needs of some of the VMs in your environment, it's definitely a good candidate across use cases.
To go back real quick, the write mirroring with the RAM. So is that just mirrored out to just another host? So it just puts it into RAM on two hosts?
That is correct. So when you choose a VM to be accelerated in write-back mode with peering, we give you a choice of 0, 1, or 2 peers. If you choose 1 or 2, then we will write out the data not only to the local acceleration resource, but to also one or two other hosts in that vSphere cluster.
And then, with RAM, I mean, obviously RAM is going to be more expensive than SSD, but I imagine you do get better performance with it.
Absolutely. You will get better performance with it, especially, you know, on the SSD side, if you have a controller that is, you know, not the latest, right? Some servers have older controllers in them, then the controller may come in the way of performance. So definitely in that case, RAM is a better medium.
Which is nice too, because that's a lot of these servers have enough overhead, or you might even be able to drop off a couple of users if you have an existing VDI environment. You know, if you kick off, you know, maybe you decrease your users per host by 10%, and then you can free up the memory that you can use for FVP to just sort of accelerate everyone.
Yep.
I assume we can spread it across the board too, right? I mean, we can put some stuff in RAM and other stuff on flash. Is there some sort of recommended split between them?
So you can definitely do that. So for example, if you had four hosts in your vSphere cluster, you can have two of them contributing RAM, two of them contributing flash. We definitely support that. Now, of course, one thing to keep in mind when you do that is that the performance of your VM will then be a function of where it's running. So if it's running on the host that's contributed RAM on Monday, then it's going to get that performance. But then if it vMotion to the host that has has contributed flash on Thursday, then it's going to get the flash performance characteristics on Thursday. So you may have variability in the user experience when you mix and match like that, but we definitely support it.
So it can't be done you can't split it up per host though, thinking that, you know, maybe if we have a smaller amount of memory available, we can use up the memory that's there for caching and then use flash for the rest of it.
So if you're asking whether a single host can contribute both RAM and flash into one FVP cluster. By the way, FVP cluster is a logical concept that we introduce where it's just a cluster of all the server-side resources that you have. We don't support having a single host contributing both RAM and flash into a single FVP cluster. Because then what you would need to also do is steer between the two, and it adds a lot of complexity for the user. So we don't support that. But what you can do is you can create two FVP clusters. Then you can have the host contribute RAM into one of them, and you can have it contribute flash into the other.
So, you know, I think I was thinking of this a little bit not in the right way in my brain. So, because it is, I don't know how to describe this. Like, so you're creating this FVP cluster, so it really is sort of like a virtual storage appliance that's being created across all these hosts, and then they're all sort of like, you know, giving in some resources to make this thing happen. So it's not necessarily like this VDI host always uses its own local resources for its own acceleration. It's sort of all these hosts work together to create this virtual, you know, cache that then all the VDI hosts can hook into.
That's exactly right. And one of the design principles we chose as we built FVP was that we wanted it to be clustered out of the box. And there's essentially two reasons for that. The first is that vSphere is a clustered solution, right? So customers have all kinds of operational workflows around vSphere being clustered, like vMotion, DRS, you name it, right? And so our product had to be clustered as well. Otherwise, you'll break all their operational workflows, which is a non-starter, right? The second thing is that if you want to support the mirroring, like, or the replication with write-back VM so that you protect the writes, then you need that the product be clustered. So our product is clustered out of the box. What that means is that, like you described, FVP cluster is essentially an amalgam of all the server-side resources in the environment. And what we try to do is, irrespective of where that VM is running in the environment, it is able to leverage a server-side resource for its IO. And we found that the performance characteristics of the VMs are therefore much better, right? Because otherwise what will happen is, if it's running, let's say, on host one on Monday, it's going to use the, say, a PCIe card on host one for its IOs. And then if a vMotion occurred and it moved to host three, you can't have a situation where it now drops down to the SAN, because the VM's performance characteristics are going to be all over the place at that point. So what we make sure is that irrespective of where the VM's running, it's always leveraging server-side resources for its I/O.
And so do you do anything to sort of maximize efficiency of your caching layer? Like, are you doing any compression or dedupe at the block level or anything like that?
So today we have network compression, which is not exactly what you're asking about from a flash device space savings. But what we're doing is because we are a clustered product, we do compress data before we push it over the network because we want to make sure that network bandwidth does not come in the way of performance. This is especially relevant for 1 gig environments. We do not support inline compression today or inline dedupe because we are a performance product. Those are more capacity-oriented features, if you will. And we are a performance product, and so we don't do that today.
So I like your answer, though. You know, how you describe why that's not as important, but then you also add the word today onto it. So it's not that important, but we don't do it today.
My mind can be changed. Yeah.
And so I wonder if you can sort of take us through, you know, like I said, do you find that your customers who are using this for VDI, are they typically, like, are you selling to them before they build their VDI and they're designing this thing from scratch? Or is it more typical where they've got VDI and they're either prototyping or piloting and they're not blown away by the performance, or just they're using VDI and it's just kind of getting slow and then they're looking for some way to speed it up? Like, are you typically getting in ahead of time, or are you coming in and fixing existing VDI environments?
So we see both, but I would say that a majority is the latter, where they have an existing VDI deployment and the performance of their shared storage is not keeping up, or their environment has grown, and they look at FVP as a good investment to make that VDI environment better from a performance perspective. But we definitely see the greenfield opportunities as well, right, where they're thinking about VDI and they architect FVP into that because they believe that the decoupling of performance and capacity makes a lot of sense.
And then
the implementation process? Oh, go ahead, Brian. Maybe you're...
No, you go, Gabe.
I was going to say, what's that implementation process like then for somebody that's already got a VDI solution that's not performing as well as they want when they want to implement FVP? Is that sort of a forklift thing where they have to move the data into an FVP cluster, or does this kind of slide in between the data and the desktops?
Yeah, it is definitely a slide in, and let me get into the details of it. So when you procure our software, what you're getting are three pieces of software. You're getting a kernel module. In VMware jargon, it's a VIB that goes inside the vSphere hypervisor, right? Then you have a UI component that embeds itself inside the vSphere client or the web client. And you have a management server piece that's responsible for keeping the UI and the backend in sync. And that's pretty much it. So you get three pieces of software. You install the software. Installation process is between 10 and 20 minutes. And you're off and running, right? If you're using SSDs, then obviously you need to, or flash devices like PCIe cards or SSDs, you have to add them into your host. If you're using RAM, you don't need to do anything. The configuration process is a three-step process. Through our UI, you create what we call an FVP cluster. You then add the server-side resources into it, be it flash or RAM. And then you add the VMs or the data stores that you want to accelerate. For VDI, typically what customers do is they'll just take the data store and drop it into the FVP cluster in write-back mode, and that's it. Three-step process, 10 to 20-minute installation process, three-step configuration, and you're all done, right? We don't change anything in the environment. We don't change the personality of your storage. Everything is as is. The VM's configuration files are not changed, right? The VM, nothing changes, and immediately after that, the VMs get server-side performance.
Yeah, so you can, it can happen a lot. I mean, it can happen into existing environments. You don't have to uninstall and reinstall or copy anything around. You just drop it in.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's important. There's when you come across solutions that require you to actually take everything down and sort of reorchestrate things or physically move things over to new clusters, I'm not as in love with the storage optimization solutions that do that. So I think that being able to do it without having to take the entire thing offline, that's very important. So good to know.
So when people actually put this in place, how do you give them guidance? Like, what can they expect? I mean, I guess it depends on how much SSD and everything, you know. Do you look at it like, oh, we'll give you back, you know, your performance play. So, you know, we'll give you back 20% more IOPS, 50%, we're going to double it. Or is that just too varied to even know?
Yeah, so, you know, the answer is it depends, right? It's a function both of what your VMs are doing and what SSDs you have and how much of it you have, or RAM for that matter, right? How much RAM you set aside for this. Having said that, it's definitely not a 20%, 30% kind of improvement. We've always seen orders of magnitude improvement, right? While I won't throw a number out there, because like I said, the answer is it depends. This is not incremental performance boost, right? This is definitely a sea change, so to speak.
And I guess people, you mentioned that, you know, there's an eval. So I guess this is something people can just download and try it. I mean, really, just if you have an VDI environment that's running, just download, install it, and kind of see what it does. And if you like it, you keep it. And if not, then, you know, delete it and off you go.
Exactly. So we have a 30-day trial. You can download it from our website. And that's what most users do. They download the software from our website. They deploy it, and if it works for them, you know, they deploy it in production.
How do you handle licensing and pricing?
So today we have a host-based licensing model, it doesn't matter, you know, how many flash devices you have and whatnot. We don't. It's not a function of that. So let me take a step back. We have five editions for our software. All right, we have the Essentials Plus edition, which is aligned with VMware's Essentials Plus. So if you are a VMware Essentials Plus customer, and then you can procure FEP Essentials Plus and deploy that. We then have a standard edition, which is a host-based licensing model. And then we have enterprise edition, which is also a host-based licensing model. The difference between enterprise and standard is the feature set. We also have a VDI edition, which is catered towards VDI deployments. And the difference between VDI and the other editions is that we price the VDI edition on a per desktop basis as opposed to a per host basis. And we have a subscription edition as well.
And the subscription edition is for, is that for end customers who subscribe, or that's for like service providers and those kinds of people?
Yes, it is. It is for both. You know, currently the most, it's mostly relevant for service providers, but we end users can purchase that as well.
Or they could just treat it as OpEx then instead?
Correct.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I some other companies have talked about going to that sort of model too, to see if that it seems like enterprises are just starting to think that way, that, you know, maybe they want to do a subscription model for their software as well, and they can just reclassify that expense then. I don't know how much that's catching on, but I assume customers are asking for it since so many companies are talking about subscription models as well.
So I'm sorry,
do you have much uptake for service providers from a DAS scenario? I mean, is this useful in that environment as well?
Yes, so we do. We, from a storage perspective, we accelerate all block protocols. We accelerate NFS, and we accelerate local data stores as well. So we are kind of agnostic to the primary storage that you have in the environment. Service providers who are our customers have shared storage in their environment. So not everyone is deploying DAS, we have service providers who are deploying block protocol, NFS, DAS, so it's all over the place. It just depends on their choice.
I see. But service providers do make up about a part of your customer base, so there's a use case there too.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious. Last week I was at Storage Decisions in New York, and I gave a presentation that was about, it was called 10 Ways that Storage Can Make Your VDI Fail. And I'm curious on some of these. I'd be interested to like get your opinion on some of these, Bala, and just see if if my sort of worldview on VDI storage actually matches up with someone who, you know, whose day job is doing storage. And I guess again, Gabe and I here are talking about VDI, but I'm sure that your product is used in more than just VDI. But I assume the VDI is a good chunk of what you're doing. Is that right?
That's definitely true. We see relevance for our product. Our customers deploy our product both for database tier one type applications and also for VDI. So definitely relevant in both spaces.
So one of the things I talked about with how storage causes their VDI environments to fail is they think that storage is storage. Especially when it comes to server-side storage, like, oh, VDI is in the data center and sort of all data center storage is the same. And my sort of view with that is that desktop storage is, desktops are different than servers. You know, the workloads are different, the different profiles, like, you know, performance and IOPS and latency is a lot more important. You've got more like 50-50 balance between reads and writes versus servers are kind of more... reads. Like, do you find that to be the case where as people tune their storage for VDI, it's a little bit different than the way they tune their storage for sort of general virtual server use?
I definitely think so. And one of the things that I think is a misconception about VDI is that it is a very read-intensive workload. And what we've found, like you said, is that VDI is at least a good mix of read and writes and sometimes predominantly write-oriented, right? So that's something to keep in mind when you're thinking about storage for your VDI deployments. The other thing about VDI that I've seen is that it is a very bursty workload, right? So when you have boot starts or you have an AV scan, it's different from your steady state. I'm using my desktop for writing out a Word document kind of scenario. So the IO profiles of desktops are very bursty, which is also different than say a data warehouse where you're running reports. And so it's a more consistent throughput oriented workload and therefore very different.
You know, that bursty thing is something that I think people don't really appreciate about VDI storage, because there's this kind of misconception that, you know, if we bring a bunch of users into our VDI environment, we're going to get economies of scale, you know? So maybe on every user's desktop, oh, we'd like to have 100 IOPS, but we don't actually need capacity to support 100 IOPS times all of our users because, you know, economies of scale and not everyone's working at the same time and everything. And I feel like a lot of people sort of undersize their IOPS for VDI because they're assuming they're going to get these economies of scale. When in reality, as you mentioned, like bootstorms is something that we can, you know, oh, you can pre-boot machines. Login storms is harder to deal with. You could maybe pre-log in users and have them disconnected, ready to go. But, you know, when crazy things happen, like this email goes around the office and everyone's downloading the same thing or the same file, or, you know, the CEO makes their announcement or something happens in the news, you know, all the users kind of react. It's like a bunch of birds in the sky who are all flying together in a herd, you know? Wait,
right.
In a flock. and so I feel like this idea of just saying like, oh, we can actually really oversubscribe our IOPS because of economies of scale, I don't really think that applies to VDI.
Yeah, so, and I think, and from a technology perspective, I'll tell you why what you're saying is absolutely true, right? If you have shared storage in your environment, there's a bunch of controllers on that, and there's only so much that the let's say you have two controllers, you know, it could be any number, but there's only so much IOPS that you can push through those two controllers in your shared storage, right? So if you have 100 desktops today and tomorrow you have 200, but the same controllers are kind of catered to the needs of their environments, at some point this is going to break, right? So, yes, I don't think that the economies of scale that the way you describe it makes sense in a VDI environment.
Yeah. Which is exactly what people were doing when they were originally designing their VDI, you know, 8 years ago. And they said, oh, we only need an average of 7 IOPS per user. That was a real thing. it's funny, too, because, you know, Bala, you mentioned, you know, like an application server kind of having more of a steady state workload. I was at a conference in London a few weeks ago, and I said something about, you know, one of the things about VDI being more, you know, bursty is that users are humans who are going to change their mind at their whim of, you know, like they might be typing an email and that's doing almost no server resources, no network resources, like no storage, nothing. And then the next thing they click and they're like watching a video and saving. I mean, it's almost like an individual user. If you look at them as an individual server, it's like they're changing their performance requirements so drastically at the drop of a hat, you know? Like, it's like you had an Exchange server that now is a database server, and now is a web server, and now it's back to an Exchange server, and now is a video server. You know, it's just like, it just changes so randomly. And so I think that your storage has to really be ready that at the user's whim, they could just be doing whatever they want and exercising that storage in some crazy way.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, there are a class of databases that behave similarly, right? For example, if you're using a database for ad hoc querying, where some, you know, what we call big data today, where you're doing some kind of ad hoc analytics, then you're constantly trying out different things. You have some machine learning algorithm running. It's churning through the data and doing different things. That is also a very ad hoc and bursty kind of workload. But VDI is definitely like that all the time, because like you're saying, there's a user at the end of it, and you know, they're not just doing predictable things from 9 to 5, right? They could be doing many different things, and you have to keep up with that.
So, you know, if you want to talk about performance now, I mean, I guess this all boils down to IOPS. And you know, one of the questions that everyone I feel like wants to know is how many IOPS do you need for Windows VDI, you know? And, you know, like, it's kind of funny because a lot of people are kicking around, oh, you need like 50 IOPS, for example. But I sort of look at, you know, if you look at magnetic hard drives, you know, even sort of a laptop magnetic hard drive has 40 to 50 to 60 IOPS. And most people are replacing hard drives in their laptops with SSDs. So I'm kind of saying, if you know your 50 IOPS is too slow for your laptop, which has its own dedicated processor and RAM and everything, and that's too slow, then there's no way you can plan for 50 IOPS for a VDI environment. So I'm kind of looking at, you know, if you're planning for IOPS for VDI, you got to be planning more in like the 100 to 200 IOPS, again, depending on your requirements. But also, because of all this sort of the false sense of security you get with economies of scale, you got to plan for like 100 or 200 IOPS, but then also multiply that across all your users and not say, oh, it's a burst of 100 down to 50 average. I mean, like, if I have 100 users,
yeah,
I need 10,000 IOPS. And so, I mean, are customers coming to you with, you know, are they trying to get guidance on what we need to do for IOPS? Or how do you answer that question? You know, how many IOPS do I need for VDI?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? For me, the answer is really what we're getting at here really is that, you know, the way you characterize performance is different than the way you characterize storage for capacity and data services, right? And I think that at the end of the day, performance is a scale-out requirement, right? And so if you are able to scale out performance with your environment, today you have 100 desktops, tomorrow you have 200, the day after you have 400. If your performance is able to scale with that, then I think that kind of solves this problem, right? Yes, we can talk about whether it's 50 IOPS per desktop or not, but really at the end of the day, like you said, it depends, right? If you're using the desktop for software development versus, you know, surfing the web, you know, those two are so different that I don't know if I can throw a number out there and say, yeah, 50 IOPS will do it for everyone. But really what we need to think about is performance a scale-out requirement or not? And can I scale out performance with my environment, irrespective of whether someone's doing software development versus web browsing? And do I have a device in my server that's able to keep up with the environment? And I think the advent of Flash and the fact that you can bring performance to the server side in a scale-out manner kind of solves that problem. So I think that's a long-winded answer, but I think that is the, you know, that is kind of the problem that we have, in that, you know, to date, we've not been able to think of performance as a scale-out thing. And now that we're thinking of it like that, I think this discussion becomes less important.
That's really, you know, it's I'm trying to think of an analogy, but I mean, everyone is so focused on a number because you have to pick that number, and, you know, darn it, once you pick that number, that's your number forever. And the reality is, if you flip the model and say, you know, it's a starting point, make sure that, you know, don't try to spend all your effort on picking the perfect number. Spend your effort on making sure that you have the ability to scale that number if the number you pick initially is not good. And then it really doesn't matter what your number is that you pick.
I mean, don't just pick anything. You gotta start somewhere. But yeah,
don't go with seven. But it's not as critical now to say, like, you know, like I care more that I am able to increase my number than I do of what the actual number is.
Sure.
So I like that. You know,
now, another, increasing your number doesn't mean I just have to add spindles.
Yeah, right, because then it increases your number of dollars and capacity. Like, I love that. I wonder how many, you know, VDI environments have like 10 petabytes of storage, because that's what we needed to do.
In 140 gig drives.
Yeah, exactly, because we needed to do that on our, you know, NetApp filer to get, you know, 100,000 IOPS. Speaking of NetApp, so Bala, I don't know if you saw, I did an article, let's say a month ago, where I talked about hardware storage vendors versus software storage vendors. You know what I'm talking about?
Actually, I have not seen that article, unfortunately.
So okay, so right now, go ahead and just set your homepage to brianmedden.com. and then, but the, you know, because, okay, so here's what it was. So you guys are a software company. I love, like, I wrote an article, I don't know, a year ago, whatever, saying, like, I like the idea of sort of software-based storage companies, because then I can use whatever hardware I want. I don't have to get stuck into my overpriced. Like, if I'm buying something from my quote-unquote hardware vendor, you know, then they're going to charge me 5x markup on, you know, the drive that I have to buy instead of I can buy the same thing from Amazon and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I've been talking about how much I like these sort of software storage vendors for a long time. And someone came up to me at a show once and was like, well, I don't know if I like these software vendors because, like, storage is so important. And, you know, if the software breaks, then it takes down my entire environment. I don't know if I really trust the software to do that. And first I'm like, well, okay, what do you think Windows is? What do you think VMware is? You know, but then secondly, I'm like, well, wait a minute. All these storage, like, all these quote-unquote hardware storage vendors, like, they don't actually make hardware. I mean, there's three companies in the world that make hard drives: Seagate, Western Digital, and Toshiba. That's it. You know, there's six companies in the world that make flash memory: Samsung, Intel, SanDisk, Toshiba, Micron, and Hynix. I'm literally not reading this from a list. Certainly not. And you know, there's two companies that make processors: Intel and AMD. Right? Like, unless your storage vendor is one of those nine companies, they're a software vendor. You know, like, you are not, like, when you go to storage and buy one of these companies where they sell you like a green box with the logo on it, you know, they didn't make the box, they didn't make the hard drive, they didn't make the flash. So I feel like this whole idea that, oh, like, software based storage is not as reliable as hardware based storage, like, it's all software. And so that dude, like, that became kind of a soapbox issue for me based on one guy asking a question once. I don't know if this is anything that you ever run into. You're talking to
customers.
Coming
up with soapbox ideas based on one question?
Well, I'll tell you what. I believe the software is... If you don't trust software, we got bigger issues. But does anyone ever run into that? Is that an issue that you ever run into?
It's not. No one has asked me that particular question. But one thing that I will say is... I'll say two things. One is the direction in which the industry is evolving. So if you look at the way the software industry or the infrastructure industry is evolving, it's evolving in the direction of saying that we want to use off-the-shelf hardware and we want to build for scale. And what that basically means is that the mean time to failure for any one component in my hardware is close to zero. And so I have to build software that is resilient to any kind of outage in the environment. If you look at, you know, what Google and the large scale data centers are doing, this is what they're talking about. And that's where the industry is moving. Hence, you know, our product too is built with fault tolerance in mind, right? So we can survive the loss of a host, the loss of a flash device, the loss of the network, and we'll be fine. And we protect your data again. We protect your data at that point, right? So that's the first thing I'll say. So that is the general trend in which the software industry is moving. The second point I'll make is that as a customer, I definitely want to ride the price performance characteristics of flash. And what I mean by that is, the price performance of flash is changing very dramatically. Every year, the capacity of flash devices is going up twofold or something like that. and the price is dropping drastically. So as you invest in flash today, you want to make sure that you're able to ride that price performance curve. When you buy a box from a storage vendor, you're not doing that, because let's assume you bought a box with flash in it. You're tied to that box for 3 to 5 years. And you know what? The price performance characteristics of flash are going to be drastically different in 3 years, which basically means you've spent overspent on flash right now, right? With a software product, what you're able to do is you're able to ride that curve. So today you buy a flash device that is appropriate for your environment. Tomorrow or a year from now, the price performance characteristics are different, which means that for the same amount of money, you're going to get a device that's twice as big and maybe faster. You can replace it. And the year after that, you can do the same. And I think for a device that's changing its characteristics so much, you definitely want to ride that curve. And software companies will allow you to do that.
And especially if you can do it on a host-by-host basis. So as you add in more hosts, you know, then spending the same dollars next year versus this year, you might have, you know, twice the performance, for example, or twice the capacity, or whatever it's going to be. And then in this case, they can just throw that into the pool, and then you've just got that sort of made available to everyone.
Exactly. So you know, let's assume you bought a new flash device and you want to use that instead of the one that you have. You simply pull out the one that's there, put in the new one, and there'll be no outage in your environment. Everything will just work with Pernix Data because we are resilient to the loss of a flash device, which is what happens when you pull the old one out. When you put the new one in, we'll detect it. You simply add that into the FTP cluster and you're off and running.
I really want you to make an advertisement of, like, I imagine like a cowboy like riding the curve. You know, like it's like in the end of Dr. Strangelove, like a dude with like the cowboy hat, woo! And like, it's just imagine like an extension cord down the street, and you just like give it a whip, and like the curve kind of shoom, like flies down the cord. I can picture the ad about like ride the curve, because that's a good point. I mean, like, yeah, you know, it's when you make a hardware purchase, that's a snapshot, a point in time snapshot. And if you're using software, obviously you're still snapshotting when you buy your purchase, but this allows you to sort of break your purchase up into a lot of very smaller purchases that happen over time, instead of making a giant purchase that you're locked into for 3 to 5 years.
Yep, absolutely.
So do you find that when you talk to people, you know, so I was, like I said, I was at Storage Decisions last week, which is a storage conference. And I'm like a quote-unquote VDI guy, right? And so a lot of
just a VDI guy.
A lowly VDI guy. Yeah, it's funny how VDI is a four-letter word to storage people. And so, a lot of these VDI projects, it still happens today where there's almost like a battle, if you will, between storage people and VDI people. And it's a little bit of like turf wars and this kind of stuff, because you may find that, people who are, if a company's invested in their existing storage system and they're, you know, kind of have like religion around it, are you able to sell Pernix Data, so the solution, do you sell that to quote unquote the storage people, or do you more sell it to like the VDI people saying, hey, take what you can get from your storage department, and you run this on your VDI host, essentially as part of your VDI system, and it's not really storage. It's like, because really you're not a storage vendor. You're a VDI, well, VDI in my world, but you know, you're a performance vendor. And so maybe I can get it into the customer site without knowing whether the storage people care about it. I can sort of slip it in as a performance solution for VDI rather than a storage solution. You know what I mean? Like, do you run into that where you've got the storage versus the VDI people, and like, are you more successful with one versus the other?
I wouldn't characterize it like that. I think that we are relevant for both and important for both. And so definitely for the virtualization admin, you know, it makes sense, right? Where we're making the VMs go faster, the performance is better, more predictable, all goodness. On the storage side, because, you know, we at the end of the day, we destage data from the server side onto the storage, and the data services are on the storage side. We definitely want to make sure that they are comfortable with that. Right. And so it's not like we play to one audience and not the other. I think they both see value in what we're doing, and we partner with both of them.
And so if you have customers, you know, the I mean, VDI is still kind of scary to people. Even though, you know, the technology's been around for 8 years, a lot of people have dabbled with it kind of here and there. I feel like VDI technology in general has gotten much, much better in the past few years. Storage technology in general has gotten much, much better in the past few years. But a lot of people are still scared of VDI, and specifically they're scared of VDI because of storage. You know, it's too expensive. It's not going to perform well. It's going to cost me my job. So what do you tell someone who's the young sort of VDI practitioner who's like, yeah, I want to do VDI, but my boss has bad experience from 5 years ago and thinks that storage is going to ruin this. You know, how do I not become scared of storage for VDI?
Yeah, so the what I will say is that the fear of storage in VDI environments is not misplaced, right? It's not misplaced for two reasons. One is from a technology perspective, performance has been, you know, underwhelming, right? And user experience has been underwhelming. And on the cost side, it's been somewhat exorbitant in the sense that you need to over-provision your storage for the worst case, right? You have to say, the worst case is here and I need to purchase storage for that, even though for the most part, everybody is not always in the worst case. And I think today with a product like FTP, complementing your storage, we're solving both problems. We're allowing performance to now be right next to the application scale out. And so you're getting consistent performance, user experience is really good. And you don't need to over-provision your storage for the worst case because the performance is being taken care of on the server side. So you can provision your storage for what you need from it, right? For the capacity requirements and the data services requirements. And so I think complementing your primary storage requirements with something like Phoenix Data actually can put to rest the qualms around VDI.
And so
I kind of want to go back to what Brian had asked before about, you know, storage versus VDI people and who you interact with the most. I'm curious, in the situation of I have a VDI environment and it's performing badly, who makes that phone call to you? Is it the storage people that are trying to save their storage from burning the data center down? Or is it the VDI people whose jobs are on the line that, you know, are trying to provide a better solution?
So again, the answer is it depends because I found that on the lower end of the market, you know, one individual may be playing both roles. In some companies, one individual may be playing both roles. In others, they are delineated. So the answer is it depends. So the call can come from someone who's looking at it from a storage perspective, or it can come from the virtualization admin. I would say if I were to give you like a percentage or majority, I'd say majority of the calls come from the virtualization side.
Okay. That's what I expected. I just wanted to see if, your experience aligned with that. So good to know.
So Greenfield, I mean, if we're in the Greenfield, how do you, you know, the software can make storage better, but it's hard to know how much better. Like, how do you go about sizing with this kind of stuff? You know, like if I want to start VDI, okay, I can use sort of more traditional storage for my actual raw capacity, which is what I need, you know, kind of like cold storage. Mm-hmm. But then to figure out what I need and like, do I need SSD? Do I need RAM? Like if I'm building a VDI environment from scratch, what do I do? Do I throw some SSDs in a box or do you just like throw some extra memory in?
So, you know, I would start off for VDI, I would start off with RAM, mm-hmm. right? Simply because it's already there in your servers.
Yeah.
And I don't think you need like a terabyte of RAM and all of that. So I would definitely start off with RAM and see if that is catering to your needs, right? And if it is, then we just run with that. If the RAM in your servers, if you don't have enough RAM in your servers and procuring more RAM is difficult for whatever reason, then definitely flash makes a lot of sense. And procuring flash isn't an onerous task by any means. So we can definitely go that route. As far as how much RAM or flash do I need, it's a function again of the working set of the application, right? So if your desktops are, if the active data that you're using at any point in time is say, I'm just going to throw a number out there. Let's just say it's 12 gigabytes. I mean, I'm making this up, but let's say it's 12 gigabytes. And then really what you want is the amount of RAM or flash that can hold that much, right? And it doesn't matter how much your cold data is. Your cold data could be 20 petabytes, but really what's coming in the way of performance is that 12 gigabytes, right? So we want to make sure that's on the server side right next to the application.
So, and you know, and again, it's software, it's downloaded for free. We're actually like at the end of our hour. So I want to give you, Bala, some, you know, a chance to sort of, you know, share some final thoughts. I mean, I guess that, you know, I'd say you go to pronixdata.com, get the demo, download it, and just, it's software. I mean, you can just, you know, check it out and see what it does. And you can, you know, just carve off, I mean, give, you know, carve off 4 gigs of RAM just to get started and just kind of see what happens.
Absolutely. So I would encourage everyone to try out the 30-day trial. Yes, you don't need flash devices on hand. You can use the RAM in your hosts and build out an FTP cluster and see what it's doing for you. I'd love to hear your feedback on the product as well. If you're interested in technical details of the product, you can read Frank Denneman's blog. Frank Denneman is our chief evangelist, and he blogs extensively on our technology, so it's a very good resource. And of course, we have case studies and white papers and all that on our website as well.
And we'll link to all that stuff in the show notes. And yeah, so I like it. Just run it. You've got alerts and monitors and the console and everything that can sort of tell me with, you know, how much improvement it's adding and what my limits are and if I need to add more memory and all that kind of stuff, I guess. And once I get the product up and running, it'll sort of guide me as to what I need to add next.
Yeah, absolutely. So the UI is very rich in terms of the data it provides. Will give you very deep breakdowns of how much of your IOs are coming from the server side, how many are coming from the underlying storage. Will give you read-write breakdowns so that you can understand your application profile, your IO profile, and you'll understand, you know, a lot about your applications and whether you should use RAM versus flash and whatnot once you try it out.
It'll make you sound very smart when you're talking to your storage people, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? I mean, one of the learnings for me, at least over the last 15 months of having this product in the market, is how much our users have learned about their applications that they, because of our UI, right? I mean, the fact that it's you know, 90% write workload, the fact that the working set is, you know, 32 gigabytes and so on and so forth, it's been very, you know, users appreciate that a lot. And that's been an amazing learning for us.
It'd be funny if they're going to find that this critical enterprise application they've been using for 17 years is just a dog. And they didn't know it. Man. Well, so that's the voice of Bala Narasimhan. And joining us from San Jose with Pronix Data. So, Bala, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And thank you to you and to Pronix Data for sponsoring today's podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. I enjoyed it tremendously. Look forward to talking to you guys soon.
Yeah, thanks again. Thanks, Gabe Knuth, joining us from Omaha. This is Brian Madden from San Francisco. Thanks to Justin Meisinger, our engineer, Mariah Lyons.
Also Mariah Lyons.
Yeah. I don't know why. It's funny. So Gabe's friend has a daughter named Mara, and I said Mara, and I was like, oh, wow. As I was saying her name, I'm like, those two have the same name. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Her name's Mariah. Hopefully she's not listening. Mariah, she is our project manager. And thank you, of course, for listening. And we'll see you virtually, I guess, next time on the next BrianMadden.com podcast. Thanks a lot.